I'm Joe Broadus. You're listening to the Friday Morning After. And I am pleased to be joined on the phone with Dr. Edward W. Felton. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm excellent.
We are going to be discussing this morning a report that you put out, a very interesting report. You are from Princeton University, is that correct? You are
Yes.
Professor of Computer Science and Public Policy, is that correct?
That's right.
And you have a new report, Security Analysis of the Diebold AccuVote TS Voting Machine. Can you just take a moment and describe how you got into doing this report? What was your motivation for doing this?
Well, there's been a lot of concern among computer scientists about electronic voting systems, and especially ones that are all electronic and don't have any paper component. And this is something that I and my students as computer security researchers were particularly concerned about, both from a technical and public policy point of view. And so when we got a chance to study a real voting machine of the same kind that's used in many elections, we really jumped at the chance to see how secure it was.
How exactly did you come into contact with the actual machine? Because I know that a lot of people want to study these machines, but they actually can't get their hands on one. Were you able to go to your local precinct and just ask for a machine so that you could study it?
No, not at all. As you said, it's quite difficult to get access to these machines. And we were lucky enough to find a private party who happened to own one and was willing to let us look at it. And really, I think it's been the lack of access to these machines that has held back research and held back public understanding of their security issues. So we think we're very fortunate to have gotten this one.
And these machines are widely used here in Quebec. I have counted, and it might be wrong, I'm in touch with Elections Quebec to confirm that, but I believe that they're used in 42 ridings here in Quebec. But they are used in about over 350 countries, is that correct?
I don't know, actually, how widely they're used outside the U.S.
Or 350 counties, I mean, I'm sorry.
350 counties. They're used by about 5% of U.S. voters, and a significant number in Quebec, apparently.
Okay, and so you don't know how many votes are counted on these machines in the U.S.?
It's about 5% of U.S. voters.
5%? Okay. And can you just go ahead and begin to describe were you looking for something specific when you started this, or did you just come up on something when you were under the evaluation period?
Well, we had some hint about what to look for in advance, and we were really interested in the possibility that a criminal could inject malicious software into the machine and possibly even a computer virus. And the reason we were interested in that is because we understood that the records of votes that are kept inside these machines are kept in ordinary computer memories. And so if some malicious software can get onto the machine, onto the voting machine, it could just go and change those records, and there's no indication that anything is wrong.
So, for the layman, are you speaking about, like, if somebody wanted to vote for Kerry, and they pushed on Kerry, it would automatically switch over to Bush, say in the 2004 election, or well, are you talking about something else?
Well, we try to stay away from specific recent examples, but we are talking about essentially the phenomenon you talked about, that a voter would vote for candidate A, and their vote would be recorded that way, and then a few seconds later, a computer virus that had gotten onto the voting machine could come along and just switch the vote to the other candidate. And at the end of the day, when you count the votes, nobody would know that the voter actually meant to vote, how the voter actually meant to vote, because all the records would be falsified.
Is it possible to do this remotely? Say if I had a machine in a certain county and because these machines are hooked up online, is that correct?
They're normally not.
They're not.
The main way that the machines interact with each other is is through removable memory cards, which you can think of as playing the same role that, say, floppy disks or thumb drives would play on an ordinary personal computers. Before Election Day, the information about who the candidates are, what the races are, and so on, gets put onto a memory card, and that then gets carried to and inserted into an individual voting machine. And after Election Day, the memory cards are taken out of the voting machines and sent back to the election headquarters, where they're counted. And so the machines communicate by people physically carrying these memory cards, and that's how a computer virus could move from one machine to another.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have a quick question for you. These voting machines are the same machines that were used in the Mexican election. They were the same machines that were used in the United States elections 2000-2004. My question for you is, without taking sides here, do you think it would be more likely that voter manipulation could be enacted if one of the candidates running had ties to the people who were actually in charge of carrying these memory cards from machine to voting counting station? For example, in Mexico, Felipe Calderon's brother-in-law was in charge of the voting machines. In the 2000-2004 elections in the United States, it was companies with Republican Party ties that were responsible for carrying the memory cards to the voting counting machines. Do you think that increases the likelihood of manipulation to occur?
Well, I think it's a dangerous situation whenever a single person or a small group who has access to the technology is technically able to manipulate votes. One of the findings of our study was that it's not just sort of the central authorities who are running the election who pose a risk. Anyone who gets access to one of these voting machines for as little as 1 minute can potentially manipulate votes. And that includes almost every worker who works in a polling place. And that's a large number of people. That's thousands of people in a single U.S. state or Canadian province who are working in the polling place, generally as volunteers or near volunteers. And all of those people potentially pose a risk, not just those who run the centralized systems.
So in terms of the implementation of these Diebold voting machines as a tool that was meant to reassure the voter of security as opposed to using a magic marker or the pencil, do you think that it has accomplished its goal of reassuring the voter, or do you think it's actually gone the other way?
Well, I think voters who are paying close attention to this issue should be somewhat alarmed by the use of this technology. I think we are at a risk of vote manipulation. I'm not sure that going back to an all-paper system is necessarily the best solution. There are safeguards that can be added to the electronic system, such as adding a voter-verified paper audit trail. That creates a paper record that the voter can check and that is kept as a record that is not subject to electronic tampering afterward. And if you do that, then you can get some of the benefits of electronic systems. One of the benefits of an electronic voting system is that it allows people who are blind or visually impaired to vote privately for the first time. It also allows the ballot to be presented in different languages more naturally, which is an issue in some places. So there are advantages to giving the user the ability to tell an electronic machine how they want their vote counted, as long as there is a paper record that you can go to.
Good day, Mr. Felton. Tell us, is there a regulatory body in the United States that oversees the upcoming elections that will be paying attention to this problem?
Well, the situation in the U.S., the election administration situation in the U.S. is a bit complex. The individual states, for the most part, administer their own elections. They're subject to some federal laws that have some limited oversight. There are also federal standards for voting technologies having to do with security, which most states have agreed to comply with. But for the most part, it's done on a very fragmented level. In New Jersey, where I live, it's done on an individual county basis, which means that we have a few dozen separate organizations within the state of New Jersey making decisions about voting machine procurement and about election procedures. And because it's very decentralized, it's hard to make any general statement about how things are run. But this also means that it's harder to implement a broad reform, like the kind of reforms that appear to be necessary to make electronic voting safe.
And will these machines be in place for the upcoming November elections nationwide?
Well, the specific machine that we looked at, the Diebold AccuVote TS, is scheduled to be used by about 5% of U.S. voters, and it's very close relative, the AccuVote TSX, by about another 5%. Now, there's some indication that that may change. The governor of the state of Maryland, which uses the machines we studied statewide, now says that he would like to see a paper-only election this November. And that's become a political issue within the state of Maryland. All in all, about 80% of U.S. voters will vote on some kind of electronic technology. Although, to be fair, many of those technologies do have a paper trail or some other kind of paper-based safeguard involved.
This is Joe again. I just wanted to ask you if you knew what the difference is between the software in this machine and, say, the software in some of these other machines. How close is the software? Do you have any idea?
Well, the software run by different vendors' machines is developed separately. And so one would not want to generalize too much from one vendor's software to another. On the other hand, there are certain underlying problems or challenges that all of the vendors face in designing their software, and we can say some things about the inherent difficulty of recording votes accurately with electronic technology. So I would not look to extrapolate the specific flaws and specific attacks, like the computer virus attack that we were able to demonstrate. I would hesitate to extrapolate those to other vendors' systems, but I do think that the overall message of our study, that it's very difficult to secure votes in an all-electronic system, will apply to other vendor systems.
Can I just quickly, you came out, I believe it was last week, and you said that this was on your blog, which is, I forget the name of it. It's
freedomtotinker.com.
There you go, freedomtotinker.com, and it said hotel minibar keys. You could open up the back of one of these machines with a hotel minibar key or just a standard key that you could order over the internet. Is that correct?
That's right. We discovered, really by accident, after we had published our primary paper, that the keys that open these machines, which as far as we can tell, it's the very same key that opens every machine of this model, which is thousands of machines or tens of thousands in the U.S., that all of these are opened with a standard file cabinet key, a key that's used in file cabinets, it's used in old jukeboxes, it's used in some hotel minibars, and you can buy it over the net. We bought several of the keys over the net, and they opened the machine just fine.
As far as the virus detection mechanism, there must be one that's installed in these machines, is there not?
No, there's no virus detector, no virus detection technology at all. We were a little bit surprised to find that the particular machine we studied is really wide open to viruses.
So do you think that if somebody wanted and had the desire to manipulate a vote, votes could be manipulated on these machines, yes or no?
As a technical matter, yes, it is possible. We've demonstrated this in our lab. We're obviously not releasing our vote stealing virus code to the public, but we have done it in simulated elections, so we know it's possible.
So these machines are not the foolhardy, are not the safety net that their proponents claim them to be.
No, not at all. Without a voter verified paper trail, these machines are subject to manipulation.
Now, Diebold has come out and stated that the machine that you did your manipulation on is an older software. What is your response to that?
Well, we studied the most recent version of the software we could get, which they have made two minor revisions to the software since we studied it. And Diebold, in their various statements, have provided a list of changes that they've made since the version that we studied. Diebold has not claimed that any of those changes would fix the problems that we reported, and as far as we can tell, there's no reason to believe that those changes would fix the problems. So we think it's very likely that even the latest version of the Diebold software is vulnerable to the same kinds of attacks. and we are calling on Diebold to allow us to look at that latest version so that we can tell.
And they have not responded?
They have not responded. Yes, Diebold's contracts with state and local election officials generally prohibit the officials from allowing the kind of independent evaluation, security evaluation that we've done. And so all we would need is for Diebold to say that they would not object to a state or county allowing us to examine their machines.
If you have a devious mind and you wanted to manipulate the voting tally, could you just tell us how would it be possible? Speculatively.
We can talk about how our demonstration works. Basically, what our demonstration program does is, the first thing I need to explain is that the voting machine is basically just a computer. It runs the system we studied runs Windows CE, which is the version of Microsoft Windows that runs on cell phones and handheld computers, and the vote counting software that Diebold provides is just a program that runs on that computer. So what we did is we wrote another program that runs alongside the Diebold program at the same time, but doesn't actually display anything on the screen, so you can't see it. And what our program does is it just watches the records of the votes that have been cast on the voting machine. Those records are kept in ordinary files, ordinary computer files on the voting machine. And our program sits on the side, it watches the location, it watches the votes that have been cast, and if it doesn't like the way the election is going, it will just go and modify those files so that the votes are recorded as going the other way. And so it's a pretty simple matter to write a program. If you know how to write computer programs, it's a pretty simple matter to write a program that will look into the vote file and change the result. The other component of our demonstration is a computer virus, which uses standard kinds of computer virus construction methods. There's a whole literature, there's a body of knowledge about how viruses work, and we pretty much applied that directly to build a virus that could spread on these machines.
So what I'm hearing from you then is that there are actually, in fact, two ways to manipulate the vote, in that it can be the individual votes themselves that are manipulated, but the easier way, it seems, is just to manipulate the tally program
right.
of the vote. And that's
right. Well, yes. So the program that tallies the votes on the individual voting machine, that's essentially what we did, and that's for someone who is out to steal votes, that is the effective thing to do. You're essentially taking the malicious person is essentially taking over the role of safeguarding the digital ballot box.
That he will get the result that he.
And then he can pull votes in, pull votes out, put votes into that digital ballot box, and get the result he wants.
And theoretically speaking, would this be done during the actual process as the votes are being tallied or counted, or would this occur afterwards?
It would occur during election day as the votes are being recorded one by one on the individual voting machine. Interfering with the tally afterward is likely to be detected. The reason being that at the end of election day, each individual voting machine prints out its vote count, and that's announced to the public in the polling place. And so anyone who records the announced values from each voting machine in a district and adds them up will know what the total vote count should be. And if the official tally is different, they'll know that something is wrong. And so someone who wants to interfere would probably choose to interfere before that tally is announced at the end of the day. That is, interfere really during election day so that your vote is initially recorded correctly and perhaps just a few seconds later could be flipped to the other candidate.
Okay. I'm sorry, but that's about all the time we have. We've been speaking with Dr. Edward W. Felton, and he has a new report out regarding the security of Diebold AccuVote TS machines. You can go to their website at itpolicy.princeton.edu/voting. And you can also go to freedomtotinker.com, and that's his weblog. I thank you for joining me this morning, joining everybody this morning, and I hope that more people are getting this information and are becoming more aware of these problems, because this is something that affects
democracy,
and we need to make sure that we make everybody aware of this and get this problem fixed. I thank you for joining us this morning.
It's my pleasure.